You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. Game 2 of the preseason is in the books, and Miami pulled off another big win, this time a 108-94 beatdown over the Charlotte Hornets. There isn't much to say about the game itself. The Hornets are not good, and Miami was without Justice Winslow, Jimmy Butler, and Goran Dragic, as well as Kelly Olynyk and James Johnson. Olynyk and Johnson obviously still out as they're nursing injuries, or in Johnson's case, trying to get his conditioning up to Heat standards. But Winslow, Butler, and Dragic sat out for rest, basically, although Butler was listed as having an illness, probably just having to travel to Charlotte, wasn't in the plans for a superstar like Jimmy Butler. But even without those players, Miami dominated the game completely. They were up 30 points at one time, and everybody was available played except for Udonis Haslem. So Spoelstra went with a different starting lineup, obviously without Justice and Jimmy. He inserted Kendrick Nunn and Tyler Herro into the starting lineup, along with Myers Leonard, Bam Adebayo, and Duncan Robinson, who we saw in Game 1 against the San Antonio Spurs. Not sure if we can get any takeaways from that, and I'm not convinced that Robinson will continue to get the starting nod, although I'll get into that a bit later. Leonard was once again a factor on the boards. He pulled down 7 rebounds in 15 minutes, and he showed some nice passing skills as well. One of the things he told me in Media Day was that in Portland, alongside CJ McCollum, Damian Lillard, and others, his playmaking ability was never really highlighted, and he's convinced that he can be a sufficiently good playmaker, and he can get that kind of skill developed if he has opportunities to do so. And he showed off some nifty passing, to be honest with you. Between him and Bam Adebayo, both of our bigs really, really showed some incredible playmaking ability. Adebayo continues to shine as a playmaker and just an all-around force. In tonight's game, he chipped in 8 points on 4 of 8 shooting, along with 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 blocks, and a steal. And this is really a big difference from years past. Between Adebayo, Myers Leonard, and to a lesser extent, Kelly Olynyk, or even a greater extent, really, Kelly Olynyk, you have some really nice playmakers in the front court. This is especially different from everything we saw from Hassan Whiteside in recent years. And even when Olynyk starts, if he does eventually regain the starting nod, there shouldn't be any drop-off considering he's a good passer. So in a way, it kind of reminds me of the two big men in Denver, Nikola Jokic, and Mason Plumlee, both of whom are very good passers. Now, Jokic obviously is a star, so the comparison isn't an exact one. But the issue here is that you have two players of similar size and skill. Olynyk, probably a better passer, and Leonard looks like a more active rebounder. But Eric Spoelstra has options. If you can go with one or the other, if one is injured for whatever reason, or even when, you know, if you do start Leonard or Olynyk, whoever does wind up becoming the substitute, you can run similar sets there. There isn't a significant drop-off in terms of talent and skill, and so that really helps Spoelstra with his rotations, with his offensive sets, things of that sort. So it's really nice to have that kind of versatility on offense. You know, both of them are subpar defenders. I think Olynyk's defense isn't as bad as a lot of people think it is. Leonard looks a little slow-footed, and that's a problem. But I think, again, in the starting lineup, with guys like Winslow, Adebayo, and Jimmy, of course, you have a lot of switchable talent on there, and so that kind of masks whatever problems he might have as a starter. I'm not prepared to say one or the other should be the starter. I think Olynyk kind of deserves that chance, considering he was comfortable playing alongside Adebayo last year, and that looks to be the starting front court. And so I don't know whether or not you want to go with Leonard or Olynyk. If I had to pick one or the other right now, I'd probably go again with Olynyk, just because I think he does have some comfort level there, and he does have some good skills. And Leonard has been comfortable coming off the bench throughout most of his career, and so that shouldn't be an issue. He's here to work. He's here to prove himself. He's got a year left on his contract, and although he's playing for his next contract, I think he can still make an impact as a bench player. So if the starting lineup was decided by me, I would probably continue to have Olynyk as a starter. So we'll see how that plays out. Some other key individual stats. Dion Waiters bounced back from a choppy first game to finish with 19 points on 7 of 12 shooting, including 4 of 5 from three-point range. He looked very active, had a quick first step, and again, that shooting ability, very impressive. Duncan Robinson had a great third quarter. He finished tonight with 14 points on 5 of 11 shooting, including 4 of 9 from downtown. He started off a little slow, like he did in Game 1. He really struggled against the Spurs, but against the Hornets, he was moving actively. The shot wasn't falling. And then all of a sudden, he just caught fire in the third quarter, knocking down a lot of those three-pointers and making those statistics look a lot more impressive than they might have been. But still, a good overall effort. And you hope that Robinson will continue to find a way to be a little bit more consistent. He's in his second year. He's still trying to figure out his role there. He's put on some muscle, as I said in last night's podcast, and he is an active player. So those are all positives. But I'm glad I had the opportunity to highlight those two in particular, because I want to use this first segment to talk a little bit more about their respective potential roles and how that affects the starting lineup. We can assume that, again, either Leonard or Olynyk will start. Adebayo for sure is going to be the starter. Jimmy and Justice clearly are the starters as well. So that leaves a fifth open spot there. And Dion made a strong case for himself against the Hornets. Now, he also spoke to reporters after the game, and he said that he understands he's still not in Heat shape. Despite my reporting that he was in the best shape of his career, clearly it's not at the level that Eric Spoelstra and the Heat coaching staff want him to be. I'm a little surprised given the kind of work that he's done. He looks fluid, he looks smooth, he looks strong. All the things that we could hope for Dion Waiters, and that might not be enough for Eric Spoelstra. I'm not sure if they're trying to push him. I'm not sure if they're trying to see if he has another level to reach, if he can get it even lighter. I don't know that he's capable of doing it, especially now that they're already active and playing games. A lot of the work that he was doing with David Alexander of DB Fitness, which I wrote about, can't be duplicated during the regular season or you're going to risk injury. So at this point, I don't know what else Dion can do to continue to get in even better shape. He can continue to work a little bit more during the off days, maybe do a little bit more cardio. But even then, he looks, again, to be already in phenomenal shape. So he also added that he has no intention of being a reserve. He wants to be a starter. And that could be a little bit of a problem because it's very easy to get those points against a bad team like the Charlotte Hornets with no one else to share the ball because Jimmy and Justice are out. But it's a different story when that starting lineup is intact. And so the question then becomes, you know, who plays alongside the other four starters? And there are cases to be made for either of them. Dion is a good initiator, much better initiator than Duncan Robinson, but you already have capable playmakers in Jimmy and Justice and to a lesser extent Bam and Olynyk. And so you don't want to have too many playmakers out there, especially a guy like Dion who needs the ball in his hands a lot in order to be successful the way he was tonight against the Hornets. But as a reserve, he'd be sharing the floor with guys like Goran Dragic and Tyler Hero. And again, either Leonard or Olynyk, whoever is coming off the bench. And so he'll be just one of many, many playmakers, either as a starter or as a reserve. And as far as defense is concerned, well, let's see. I think Robinson at 6'8 has great size for the front court. He also has great shooting range. Like I said before, he moves very well without the ball. You saw him going around screens. He's very active for a big. And I think he has some good size, strength, and screening ability. So I think you can do things a little bit differently with Robinson in the starting lineup. I don't think you can run those same kinds of sets with Dion. And so if I had to guess, if I'm put on the spot here and having to pick either Dion or Duncan Robinson, I might be at a point where I'd say Robinson is clearly the better option just because you have so many other playmakers. You have guys like Jimmy who are going to dominate as far as scoring is concerned. You have Justice who needs the ball in his hands in order to be effective. You don't want to minimize what he can do because he's got superior talent to Dion Waiters. But at the same time, I don't know if you want to risk alienating Dion Waiters. I don't know if you want to create any kind of trouble in the locker room. But Dion clearly hasn't earned a starting nod. A lot of people were surprised that he didn't get the start in Charlotte, considering that Justice and Jimmy were out. Tyler Hero got the start instead. Dion certainly took advantage of the opportunity when he did come off the bench, again, albeit against a very bad Hornets team. So, you know, this is sending a message, and Dion responded the way we could expect him to, the way we'd hope he did, you know, he could, which is to have a really big performance and kind of force Spoelstra to change his perspective. We saw this kind of chicken fight going on last season as well, when Deion was working his way back from injury. He had a couple big games, I want to say in December, maybe January, when he finally came back into the rotation. Kept expecting more playing time. It wasn't there at first. Spoelstra kind of, maybe stubbornly, kept him on the bench a little bit. Deion responded with big games, and eventually, in a season that was kind of tanking and with the injuries going down the tubes, Spoelstra eventually relented and inserted Deion into the starting lineup. But this isn't the same situation, unless, you know, barring any significant injury to either Justice, Tyler Hero, Goran Dragic, or anybody else, Deion doesn't seem like a clear starter right now. So it's all about balancing those personalities in the locker room, something that Eric Spoelstra has always done pretty well. Hassan Whiteside has been his biggest, most difficult challenge. That didn't always work out well. I don't want Deion to be the next problem in that locker room. I don't know that Deion will be. As I said last night in our podcast, you know, I said he was probably more comfortable, or comfortable at least, with the option of coming off the bench. To reporters after Charlotte, he did not say that. He said the exact opposite, so I might have been wrong there. I thought he would be more accepting of the opportunity and understanding that he has to prove himself. And even still, even if he does prove to be an incredible scorer, or a spark plug off the bench, it changes the way things can play out in the starting lineup. And so with Duncan Robinson there, you can do things a little bit differently. He's not a guy who needs the ball as much. He's more of a catch-and-shoot player. And so it kind of balances well when you have three or four other playmakers in that starting lineup. And so, again, if the season were to start today and everybody was fully healthy, I think Eric Spoelstra goes with Duncan Robinson as a starter. And so hopefully that won't create any problems in the locker room. Hopefully Deion understands that he can be a significantly impactful player coming off the bench. We'll see how that plays out. Coming up next, I'll talk about Miami's chances in the Eastern Conference. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Locked On at checkout. Get into some more stats of the game in our next segment, but first, Marcelo Mello 25 asks via Twitter, "The Heat look great these two games, and as a result, I cannot see them less than a fourth seed. Am I drunk on lemonade, or is it real?" Probably a little bit of both. You know, I know that's not kind of the answer that you're looking for. I know most of our listeners would say, no, clearly this is one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, but look, you played a San Antonio Spurs team that is a slower step than they were in years past. They don't have the same kind of superstar talent. It's also the preseason, so you have to take it for what it is. You can't glean too much from these preseason games. As much as you want to, it's not so clear-cut that Miami can be a very, very good team. It seems like their bread is going to be buttered in very specific ways. They're going to play good defense. They're going to try to knock down a lot of threes. Those are all great things, and Miami has, I think, the versatility on defense and the talent on offense to be able to pull that off. But you do have other strong teams in the Eastern Conference. If you're looking at specifically the East, clearly Philadelphia, with their talent level, their starting lineup in particular, their depth is a concern, but I think their starters are, if they're healthy enough, Joel Embiid in particular, and if Ben Simmons can take another step in his development, not just as a shooter, although obviously after his made three-pointer, everybody kind of freaked out, especially from the Philadelphia 76ers fan base, we won't expect that to be a regular part of his offensive repertoire. Either way, he can still take a leap as a scorer, and he can continue playing a high-level defense and being the playmaker that he is. Philadelphia's going to be good, barring any injury. Milwaukee, similarly, they did lose some players in free agency, but they also gained some back, and I think they're going to be very good. I think they're going to continue to win a lot of games in the regular season. The issue for them is going to be their postseason show, how they're able to sustain it and maybe take a different strategy into the postseason. Mike Budenholzer is a little stubborn when it comes to the way he runs and manages minutes. And that was certainly the case in last postseason. Milwaukee, you could claim, was eliminated because Budenholzer refused to play Giannis Antetokounmpo at a high level. He didn't play him for as long as he should have. And so they were eliminated from the playoffs. Toronto, obviously a very, very good team. Without Kawhi Leonard, I'm not sure where they stack up. You know, you go around the league, you talk to enough players and you know, coaching staff and reporters and things of that sort. Toronto gets the nod because they are the defending champs. But not really. Kawhi Leonard was such a big part of what they did. Even though they had a lot of success during the regular season without Kawhi, I'm still not 100% convinced that they're going to be as dominant as they were in years past. I think, you know, OG Anunoby has some room to kind of shine in, you know, instead of Kawhi Leonard. You know, they just signed Kyle Lowry to an extension. So his contract situation is set up. But if they start to lose a number of games, you could see them trading away Serge Ibaka. You could see them trading away Marc Gasol. And if that's the case, they're not as strong a contender as you'd think. I don't see them as a legitimate title contender. They're probably a good team to make the playoffs. But even still, part of the situation there is that they don't have much to prove. Toronto, for so many years, has had kind of a chip on their shoulder, whether it's the fact that they're in Canada or the fact that they've never been able to get past the first round or that they've always struggled and all these different issues that they kind of used as motivation to be able to push them further and further, deeper and deeper into the playoffs. They got as far as they possibly could. They won a title. They beat the Golden State Warriors. After that, it's all downhill. And so I'm not sure that they're going to be able to pull off the same kind of victories during the regular season that they did in the past. And every other team in the Eastern Conference, whether it's the Boston Celtics, who look like they're struggling a little bit, even though they have some talent, the Indiana Pacers, they're going to try and incorporate Jeremy Lamb and Malcolm Brogdon coming over from the Milwaukee Bucks. Victor Oladipo still out with injury. It's not a clear race there. So as far as the fourth seed is concerned, you know, my former co-host Wes Goldberg and I talked that maybe the third seed was realistic. It's certainly possible. You look at the Southeast Division specifically, Charlotte Hornets, Washington Wizards, they're not going to be very good. Both teams are going to be very, very bad, struggling to find any kind of identity. Washington going through major injuries, Charlotte having some major talent problems. They're not going to necessarily make any rooms. They're not going to be challenging for a playoff spot. So they're automatically out. Atlanta, as young as they are and as talented as they are, and they do have some talent, some very good young talent, I'd still wait a couple years. It's going to take some time for head coach Lloyd Pierce to develop Trae Young to get him to where he needs to be, if there's another step, and if he takes it this year. He could conceivably take a step backwards. But either way, they'll be fun to watch. It's not about making the playoffs. I talked about this recently on Locked On NBA on Tuesday, where I made a comparison between the Hawks to the New Orleans Pelicans. Both teams have these incredible, unrealistic playoff expectations because they have this young talent, because they're going to be fun to watch. And that might be it. They're just fun to watch. And that doesn't necessarily translate into wins and losses, or more specifically, wins. So I don't see Atlanta making a playoff push. The Orlando Magic, they do concern me. They have some consistency there. They're well-coached. Steve Clifford doesn't get nearly enough credit. He's consistent, if nothing else. He's coached a lot of teams before. He finds a way to get the most of them. The players love him. He has the respect of the locker room the way Frank Vogel never did, the way Scott Skiles certainly never did, the way Jacques Vaughn and James Borrego, who's now coaching the Charlotte Hornets, never did. So Steve Clifford is a very different animal in Orlando than he was elsewhere. And I think they have enough young talent there and enough proven veteran players where they can be dangerous. They are already 3-0 in the preseason. Again, you can't take much out of that. They'll be the biggest challenge to Miami in the division. And they're among the teams that could probably be better than Miami this season. They've always given Miami problems in the past in the regular seasons for whatever reason. So that's going to be something that we definitely have to keep an eye on. If Miami can win those games at home, if they can defend against the Southeast Division, which has been a problem. They've lost games to Charlotte. They've lost games to the Wizards. They've lost games to the Hawks and Magic. This can't happen. And you think with Jimmy there pushing this team and with the kind of talent disparity that they, I'm sorry, not talent disparity, the kind of talent distribution that's on this roster, they'll be aware now that they have something greater to play for. If the goal is to make the playoffs, and it's not, you know, I think that's pretty easily attainable, they should be looking seriously at home court advantage. And the way to do that is to defend your home court during the regular season, to knock off bad teams, to do what you have to do and to challenge those good teams so that you can make it respectable at the very least. And if you're looking at the playoffs, you want to have whatever advantage you possibly have. You've already got a clear-cut superstar, one who shines in key moments, one who shines in the postseason, the way he did, even on talent-laden roster in Philadelphia. Jimmy Butler was their best player, better than Joel Embiid, better than Ben Simmons, better than Tobias Harris, certainly. And I think you can expect that in Miami as well. And so home court advantage is definitely something you need to play for, whether it's the third seed or the fourth seed. That should absolutely be the goal for this team. So you know what, Marcelo Melo, I'm with you. I'm optimistic that they'll be at the very least a fourth seed, and that should be their goal throughout the rest of the season. Coming up next, I'll talk about the stat and player of the game. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. The stat of the game. Look, it's the Charlotte Hornets. It's the preseason. There's only so much you can glean from this, but there were some good things there. There were some really stellar performances there from Dion in particular. It was nice to see Duncan Robinson bounce back. The bench got a lot of playing time, as I said. Everybody played, with the exception of Udonis Haslam. And the starter, Kendrick Nunn, played a total of 26 minutes, tied for the most between both teams. He finished with a game-high 17 plus 17 rating, including 13 points, 7 assists, 2 rebounds, and 3 steals. He went 1-6 from 3-point range and 6 of 12 overall. But I wanted to use this outing to talk about his chances of being a contributor this year. The stat of the game, obviously, is that 26 minutes that he played a lot. But I just don't see that being something duplicated during the regular season. This backcourt is so deep. You've already got, as I said in the first segment, you've got real capable ball handlers already starting in Jimmy and Justice. You've got other bigs that can initiate offense. You've got Goran. You've got Dion. You've got Tyler Hero. People that you're going to be invested in. Now, you could make a trade. Either you could trade away Goran Dragic or you could trade away Dion Waiters. And if that's the case, then certainly Kendrick gets an opportunity. You love his attitude. You love his competitive spirit. One of the things that Spoelstra kept saying on Media Day was how much he loves those Chicago players. Obviously, Dwayne Wade being prominent among them. But he loves guys from Chicago because there's a toughness there. There's an ornery nature to them, a competitive fire that he loves. And Nunn seems to have that. And, you know, he's a player that has taken some time to kind of develop. But he's continued to work. He had a strong outing in Summer League. And he's played well, you know, he played well against the Hornets. And he had some moments against San Antonio. So I could see him being a guy that you want to get playing time. And maybe he'd make the most of those minutes whenever they do come. But again, with the depth on this roster being what it is, and that's a good thing. It's always a good thing to have as many capable contributors as possible. I don't know that Kendrick is going to get the opportunity. And so unless there's a trade to free up some of that talent, I just don't see how Nunn is going to get any kind of significant opportunity to shine. So it's good that he's going to get these opportunities. He'll be on the roster. When he does play, maybe he can make the most of that. But for now, it doesn't seem realistic that he's going to be a steady contributor. The player of the game, or the GOAT of the game, well, who else can it be but Dion Waiters? You know, Dion continues to be an enigma. You know, in his first game against San Antonio, he struggled. He made some nice plays, but more often than not, he turned the ball over. It looked like he was forcing it. Still trying to get into shape, according to Eric Spoelstra. Against Charlotte, had a really good game, though. And just focus on that, because the reality is we're not quite sure what version of Dion we'll get from game to game. He had 19 points, really confident as a shooter, really good first step. And how much of that is Dion being a good athlete or Charlotte playing some pretty poor defense, because they were all over the place defensively? I think you'd say it's a 50-50 split. But Dion has shown the ability to get to the hoop against other opponents. So, you know, hopefully this is more indicative of the norm than not. And so I'm not sure what happens with Dion, to be honest with you. You know, as I mentioned in the first segment, he could be all over the place. He can also be a starter if Eric Spoelstra wants to keep things going smoothly in the locker room in particular. And if not, we'll see how he can handle that challenge of coming off the bench. I think for Dion, it's better for him to accept that role. I think the league as a whole doesn't know what to make of Dion Waiters. And given his injury history, given his talent, given his overconfidence, at least publicly, his best chance of gaining a next contract is to be a good soldier and to be a team player, a guy who accepts whatever role is carved out for him, and to make the most of that opportunity, not to gripe over starters' minutes and things of that sort. I think for Dion, he mistakes being a starter with being proven with having shown that you are capable and that you are as good a player as he expects himself to be. And that's not necessarily the case. You can be a really good bench contributor and a guy who can stay in the league for a number of years. And that's what's important for Deion. You know, otherwise, you could see him playing overseas and being a superstar there and being able to dominate the way he thinks he can. And that might not necessarily be the best thing for his career, but he has to figure it out and soon. As far as the scapegoat of the game or the worst player of the game, KZ Okpala was a pretty clear choice. He played 50 minutes, but he really struggled, even against the low-quality opponents in Charlotte. He finished with just 2 points on 1-of-5 shooting, and there's not much you can take against that. Again, preseason game, he's still a rookie. He's trying to figure himself out there, but he looked a little choppy, probably a little nervous. He just needs playing time, and he's not going to get it in Miami. He's going to get it in Sioux Falls, and if that's the case, I think he can dominate there. I think he can figure it out, and he has the tools. He's got the versatility there. And hopefully he can continue to tie it all together and eventually come back and become a contributor. If not this season, probably the next. The Heat won't play again until next Tuesday, the 14th, when they host the Atlanta Hawks in Miami. Tip-off for that game is at 7:30. That's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, D.